Now, I want you to know, this is without the PA system on, council citizens, you know, we're opposed to BioGreen, and I want you to know that. Okay, now I'm going to come over and pretend like I'm mayor. That's fine. We'll just test. Okay, now I'm sitting over here at Don Greiner's seat. You know, I'm Don, and I'm not sure I like the way this is headed. I don't like the discussion. Now I'm moving over to Adele and the mayor, Barbara Hedges, and talking from that location. And now I'm going to turn the mic on and see how that works. So I'm back out to the podium where the witnesses will be, and I'm talking on the mic. See the PA system and see how that works. Okay, test 1, 2, 3, 4. Test done.
Yeah, there's this January. 19. That's right here, thank you. January 19th, 2011, at the South County Building Meeting Room. We will establish a quorum at this time, starting from my far left.
Gloria Fleming, Commissioner. Yikes! I've been going to too many council meetings.
Commissioner John Thomas, present.
Commissioner Virginia Class, the president.
We do have a quorum.
That's funny.
And now we will have a Pledge of Allegiance. Linda Mayor, do you please lead us in that Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much.
I did that once before, the first form. And I was the secretary, and that's the first thing out of my mouth. Fleming Counselor.
All right, added agenda items. What this is I will ask for any matters that will be added to this agenda under number 11, other matters. In addition to this agenda, is there anything further that we would add to this? No, there will not be. So we'll move to agenda item 5, public comments for items not on this agenda. So public, this is the time you would comment for items not on this agenda. No public comments. They either love us or hate us. We don't know what that is. No. Okay, so number 6, approval of Plan Commission meeting minutes. I trust that we have all read December 14th regular and public hearing minutes. Are there any changes? I would entertain a motion this time for any changes on those meeting minutes.
No, anything.
I didn't. I read them off the email I got.
Oh, I move that we approve the December 14th minutes, both the regular planning commission and the public hearing minutes.
I second it.
Motion has been made and seconded on approval for meeting minutes for December 14th. On the question, are there any other comments? No, there is not. So, all those signify by the sign of aye to approve the December 14th Planning Commission meeting.
Aye.
The ayes have it. It's ordered. Number 7 is the final draft of the zoning ordinance. Deborah and James.
As you've been proceeding through the process, you've had your public hearings and your workshops and your deliberation to go through and assemble the codes, and it's the zoning ordinance and the other groupings of things like sign and lighting and mitigation procedures and subdivision. And we have taken your comments and inserted those. And the best way to do that is through track changes, which you have a copy of. The email version is going to be the cleanest because it has color and it's easy to see where things have been changed. James and I will need to go through and do one more smoothing and polishing to make sure numbers work and that we don't have duplicate information between the codes. And that will take some time. We were set back with the BioGreen issue, and so we got focused on that, and our timeline has slipped a little bit. But it's still within the parameters that we have agreed upon with the City Council. There are two new things I want to talk about. And in the code right now, Deschutes County has...
The zoning code.
Yeah, in the zoning code. Deschutes County has setbacks that are related to the FEMA flood maps, mm-hmm. or the FERM is what we call the map. And on your map itself, you'll see in the blue hatch mark area, the floodplain, it follows from the south of the city and follows along the river. And there are setback standards and building standards that you're familiar with from your other work that are applied by the county now. We need to transfer that information into the code. I've done some of that here, but then I was just advised from the state there have been some updates. So if we're doing a new code, we want to update the flood regulations. There aren't too many changes, minor things, and I'll make sure to email those to you when we finish our smoothing. The other thing is a riparian setback. The flood standards really tell you where to build at what elevation so that if there's a flood event, whether a 100, 200, or 500 year flood, your house isn't going to be swept away, and there are certain standards for how you do that. Those are all explained in the code. The riparian setback has more to do with protection of the natural resource, which are the river and the banks, and in some cases, the upland. And the upland is the stuff that you wouldn't consider riparian habitat because it's dry. But it all works together to make the river healthy. And so we need to insert, consistent with the county's code, a setback. And that setback is 100 feet. In the code, I put in 75. It's a typo. So we want to be consistent with the county. I really don't want to add something in that would set us up for a Measure 49 claim. So being consistent with the county is probably the best way to work that. If you can draw your attention to the map here, the area that's affected by the city will be any place you see the flood line first, and then a setback from the river top of bank itself. So the critical areas are probably just going to be in here. That's the closest area to the river. And you have that setback in place today through your county code. So we're going to make that transfer over.
How does that affect?
Oh, what it means is if you have an application to build a home, say on this lot, you'll have to have your structure 100 feet back from top of bank. And if you go out there today, we just double check today, the river in most places is channelized. Kind of sits down a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you go top of bank, back. We also have in the code exceptions. And if you remember, the Planning Commission was very intent on having an individualized review for special situations. We would either go through a variance, a conditional use, or exceptions to provide relief if it's warranted. So, but generally, 100 foot from top of bank.
And it's generally talking about building a house.
Structures. Yeah. Okay. In some cases, activities. I don't think the Parks District's going to have a problem.
Yeah, I know they plan on doing some development, but they are very concerned about, the banks and doing everything right so that they don't...
And it includes vegetation, like clearing vegetation, things like that, in addition to just building structures.
Well, and then Deborah, the Glenwood Acres, the yellow residential right there is Glenwood Acres. That may be completely built out, to my knowledge right now. I don't think there's any bare lots.
It feels that way.
In there, and I think it may be built out. And if it is built out, you'd just be looking at any further development. Where I could see a problem is you've got a 1978 home built what may be in some new state floodplain that they've updated or whatever, and that person comes to the city of LaPine to, for a building permit to add a garage or to add an addition on their house. And the city of LaPine has a big problem with the new floodplain repairing, repairing the maps and different things. That could be a problem for the city in the future, I think.
You'll want to look at each of those applications individually. I think to be safe with the state and consistent and keep you out of harm's way on Measure 49, as long as we're consistent with the existing regulations, which have been working for a while, we should be in good shape. Later on, the state's going to come back and want more data about LaPine's wetlands, and you'll be involved in that process. When we give you an update on the comp plan, you'll hear us talk about some of the things that the state's interested in having us do in the future, and that's one of those items.
When you talk about wetlands, now, that, I'm thinking down further near 6th Street.
Yeah, FEMA.
Those are definitely considered wetlands.
That's a FEMA floodplain right there.
It's a floodplain.
Okay, it's not considered wetlands.
If you go out here today, it almost follows this exact contour. It's swampy and you can see water up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a floodplain, but I mean, it's a wetland as well. Mm-hmm. Just from work they've done down here in the past, it's designated wetland. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty channelized, like Deborah's saying. I mean, mm-hmm. you can see where it's at, so it's pretty confined to that area.
Well, I could see some real restrictions, you know, coming from the state in the future is that Little Deschutes Riverway, because all waterways in Oregon are just increasingly becoming more and more restrictive.
Yes.
And so, you know, our new mayor lives in Glenwood Acres right now. He might put the word out down in his next neighborhood watch association that if anybody wants to build or do something, they might want to consider it in the near future.
And it'll be consistent with the standards that you have now.
Yeah, so it's not going to change.
It's not going to be a huge difference.
Well, the state changes.
Later on.
Yeah,
oh,
the state, you know, they come up, seem like every 5 or 10 years and increase the flood, you know, to change the floodplain in some way. So, and then we as a city will be required to conform with state regulations. It's the highest governing authority. And so whether it be FEMA or the state, City of LaPine, you won't receive any graces from City of LaPine.
Well, you're right. What the county has right now, though, is, see, under the state rules for protection for riparian areas, they have what's called a safe harbor, meaning you can go through and do one of two things. You can either do your own study to determine what is the important critical riparian area, you know, for habitat reasons or a variety of reasons, and really define where that's at and take your setback from there, or you can take the safe harbor, which is just a, it says as long as you're this far back, you're good. Mm-hmm. And typically, unless you have large expanses of area that are undeveloped, you know, a lot of jurisdictions just go with the safe harbor. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you have to pay for a big, long, in-depth study. So,
but those would be the one you're talking about. Those
change.
Would be grandfathered in the ones that are existing now. How so they wouldn't be affected unless they wanted to change something.
Yes.
That's what John's talking about.
That's right. The other thing I want you to be aware of is that we need to have for the protection of citizens the FEMA regulations in place. We'll transfer those over. People can't get flood insurance unless we have those regulations in place. So the county has them in place, and we'll transfer them to our stuff. Now, in the future, there will be, just because the world changes and topography changes and impacts change, there will be some grants available to remap the flood areas to make sure that they're accurate. Mm-hmm. Channels change. I mean, look at this baby.
Right.
So, you know, that will be in the future and something the city should be responsible for. I'm not worried about it now. I want to talk just a little bit about the TAO zones, which are the transition area overlays. And if you remember, we talked about making sure that those were master planned areas, planned unit developments that serve the purpose of a buffer between zones. And because we got caught on our timeline. We've talked about it. You've directed us to do those things. We just have to add the words. And essentially, it's going to follow the uses that are underneath it, provide greater flexibility to do transitional planning, and make sure that those kinds of things come to you for review. So that if somebody plans a master plan in this area, or down here, it comes back to you for review so that you can make sure that those concepts you told us to put in the code are met.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got that in the procedures and the land division ordinance.
Here, I'm developing an idea that if they are to be used with the zones underneath, you all see the crosshatched areas and you see the colors underneath there that represents the type of zone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If primarily we're just going to approve uses that are under the transition overlays, then where are we going to, where is there going to be a difference?
Because
other than just having the people do a master plan.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Did you want to?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so here's what the PUD section would allow for these transitional areas is greater flexibility, perhaps uses that contribute to making buffers. So in some places where just residential is planned, mm-hmm. you might have a transitional use with neighborhood commercial uses or an office or live-work situations. The planned unit development has language in it that allows you to go beyond what's underneath but respect what's underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody has something that contributes to good planning, it makes sense from a transitional standpoint, it enhances the underlying zone, those kinds of things can be approved through the process you put in place.
I think of it oftentimes, you have Burgess Road, which is an arterial
mm-hmm.
Traffic noise, and the underlying zoning was single family residential. It's not the most conducive to have your backyard back up to a road like mm-hmm. that. So what it's saying is, I think of it as, show us a good design that may be more intensive than what the single family residential use would allow, where you get maybe some multifamily dwellings and commercial along the road, but you transition, when we say transition, it back into single family. So whatever abuts mm-hmm. the single family portion outside the crosshatch area is compatible, mm-hmm. but you don't have that hard edge of single family residential against the road either.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing, it gives you the flexibility. See, it gives somebody the opportunity to develop that property and say, you know what, I have a good design, please look at this and consider all the good aspects of it rather than just hard and fast it needs to be single family mm-hmm. residential.
Or where we have the green buffer, maybe somebody wants a little skinnier buffer because it's appropriate, but then does a little pocket park too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good trade-off.
Well, can I ask then, under the TAO zone here then, is that going to be clear to a citizen or a developer?
Yes.
Under the TAO zone, I read to it, but I...
What page are you on?
Whatever page the TAO zone is on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me get there, because I'm not there either.
Let's just look at the wording real quick and make sure that that's real clear.
19 or so?
19?
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that that's clear to citizens and developers because it's not real clear to me right now.
Okay.
So I want to make sure.
I'm having my pagination. Right. This one. And those don't seem. That's what we just.
Oh, you're in the old.
I'm in the old because this one doesn't even.
Well, yeah, it's all
that's right. This is very.
It's right before the.
That one doesn't work for
you?
Okay.
Well,
did you look at
it
on the computer?
Yeah, I saw that on the computer. And really, the red highlighting is very useful on that computer.
Okay. You know, the pagination on mine's gone away. Oh, wait, there it is.
And really, the line through the old wording is very helpful also because what was changed. See here under the new, what they've done is they've lined through some old stuff and put in the new, so it's a lot easier.
So it's nice that there were pages.
What
on
page
that.
Are we on?
I'm still looking.
Yeah, some of that pagination went away. So it's Article 4. We'll fix that.
Because I guess what I'm looking for, my point is that you come in and you're in a 2AO zone.
Which is an overlay.
It's an overlay, and you want to bring a plan to the city. It should be that it's clear enough that doesn't leave a lot of just interpretation from the city to send the person back and forth to the drawing board until they come up with what the city has interpreted to be a transitional use. It should be fairly clear, and I still don't
On the chart.
On the new one?
Yeah. There's no page number. They all say page 15.
Yours says 15?
Okay. Yeah, they all say 15. They have no new pages.
Okay, we'll fix that. Mine looks a little different. They all say the same at the bottom. Every page says the same thing. Okay. See, and then it changes back to the pagination. Okay, I will fix that.
Well, and then the June 8, you know, to go away and all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just old drafts.
Yeah. But really, for purposes of this rough draft, I do like the way it's laid out, though.
Site plan, so we can see exactly what changes.
It sees the changes that were made along this process.
If you look at the chart where we have the quickie chart in there with the information for each zone, mm-hmm. we call it TAO, Transitional Overlays, mm-hmm. and then we have under Principal Uses, we say what it is. Those are transitional uses between different zones. We're going to require master plans to make sure that transitional needs are met. And then we're giving great flexibility to conditional uses and accessory uses. And one of those things that we need to add in is a little more description so people know exactly what that means.
Well, and here's the thing. I don't think we'll be able to put enough language in here that will stand the test of time. So I think what we probably should do is just have a policy whereby the Planning Commission and Council know what will go in the zone, as long as we're clear on it. And then if we could help these people, as I said before, when they come in and they begin to develop in these areas, one of these times this economy is going to pick up, people will start developing again. When they do that, we need to sit down with them and help them with their master plan. You've seen it in other areas where people bring in master plans and they're sent away and they go back and forth until
it's nutty.
It doesn't give government a good name when you don't sit down and help them. So I think if we just help them with that transition with those master plans, because Joe Q Public is not going to know the difference between a plot plan, master plan, and all this and that. So I think if we just help them, it'll.
And that's another thing that we talked about is when this data is transferred to the council, we're going to have a memo essentially saying, you know, we talked about some policy things about implementation, mm-hmm. making sure the public has the greatest ability to understand what tools are available and mm-hmm. help them through it. Now, don't forget, those application forms have yet to be developed.
Right.
They can be immensely helpful to applicants because it'll give you a step-by-step, here's what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything like that's going to be in the zoning ordinance because mm-hmm. it's more about permitted and conditional uses. And the application features, while we talk about it in various places, you're going to have greater flexibility on those forms.
Yeah, it'd be neat to have a system that's easy for all to understand. You know, I think so many of these cities and these counties, you know, they understand that they're going to their inside meetings every day and they understand how their department works, and that's where it stops. And the citizens come in and they're made to feel like they're ignorant because they don't know how the system works, when the only people who know how it works are people in the CDD.
Okay.
I certainly hope this CDD is different once we get established than others, and that is to be to realize that the builder is a single citizen or even a new developer that doesn't have 20 or 30 years under their belt developing needs help, and they need the city to help them step by step and let them know what they would like to see and not what's not allowed all the time.
A little more progressive approach instead of being an obstacle, help people.
That'd be wonderful.
Okay. Remove obstacles.
Okay. And I see how, they'll come in there in TAO, and then the principal use is the transitional use that's under the overlying zone. Well, and then we'll say, you could say like this area will need a master plan for approval or whatever, and then say, you could simply just say, we talked about meetings, pre-development meetings, could be required with the planning director or whatever, and at that time, that person can sit down and go over. But because there won't be, we're talking about TAO zone is not very big anyway, so we're not talking a lot, but I just know that the citizens, when they think of master plans and such that cities and counties require, it doesn't give you a real nice vision of what's going.
It would be similar to the PUD, the plan unit development requirements that are in the land division code, mm-hmm. where it gives you minimum standards that you have to meet, but then it'll afford you all this flexibility, and those standards get things like make sure you have walking paths. Maybe they're not traditional sidewalks, but show us how you're going to get through the mm-hmm. development. Show that you're not going to overburden public infrastructure. And it gives you some basic minimum requirements, and then gives you the flexibility. And so I think you're saying, though, you don't want it to be back and forth between the city and the developer over and over.
No, I think if a developer, when I say developer, I mean anybody.
Yeah, whoever's developer.
When I say developer, they need to
get more lists of items.
They need that checkoff list. Don't vary from the checkoff list, and sit down and have some time. They can sit down and go over their. I've been in an area before where I've turned in plans, and these folks that are plan examiners, I'm sure they see hundreds if not thousands of these. They get a little frustrated. They've been there 20 years and they just can't understand why everyone is ignorant of the laws. It's just unfortunate.
It sounds like you've had some bad experience.
That person's first time in there.
Yeah.
Since then, I've been back and forth a lot of times, so I've learned to live with them. But that's just a policy issue, and we've already gone on that before.
Excuse me. Could maybe a vision statement of where the planning from this would have to involve the city council too, as to mm-hmm. in these transition areas what we expect or what the idea is.
Well, development as far as that goes.
It's the flexibility that James talked about. The need to provide a buffer because you have differences in uses, whether it's a big arterial or a different zone. Mm-hmm. But the trade-off is, if you get that flexibility, what does the public get in return?
Right.
Maybe it's a connection to a trail, maybe it's a mini pocket park, maybe it's a better arrangement of uses. And that's why master planning in the PUD section is so important. And we can list in the TAO section the expectations so people understand that better. And that's what we have
here.
Why
we're doing it.
And we've talked about it in the past, we just simply ran out of time on that one.
And I don't know if we're not following the agenda here, but I wanted to bring up something. I looked at some other city approve development departments on the websites. And one in particular was West Covina, California. Okay, just I'm sure West Covina, California is
huge.
It's a large, large city. I'm sure it's very large, and they've been in business for many, many years. When you go on their website and you want to build a simple garage or a or an addition onto an existing home residence, it requires 1 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. It was amazing to see how simplified some of these cities have made this process. I think they realized that the little 24 by 24 garage with a 412 pitch requires, you know, a lot less development standards and engineering and everything than a large high rise. And so what they've done, I think they've made a distinction on we're going to deal with things on this on the smallest basis possible first. And so they require this one page with shows a couple elevations, and really after that, it's what they do is they give them the specifications. So I come in as a citizen with my 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper showing a 24 by 24 garage, one sheet of paper. The city, if they want to send the copy to the fire marshal, then the city should do it. They shouldn't be required to bring in all these different copies. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. The city can simply email these copies, and if you can't email, then they can fax them over. But and let everybody know that this garage is being built. Now, what the city does then is the city sees that this is a 24 by 24 garage. They see, or they have in their file, because they're in that business of the building specifications that need to happen in this.
Right.
They in turn give those specifications to the person so they can go out and build their garage. The inspector then goes out, it's built, and it's done. And it's a very, very simple process for a very simple development. It would be awesome to have Lapine be that way.
Kind of an over-the-counter, you're done.
Or relying on the inspector to field check what they told you to do rather than this big cumbersome permitting process up front that says, tell us what you're going to do, and then we'll check in the field.
Exactly, because that person may have their Uncle Joe, who's a general contractor, build that garage. Okay, Uncle Joe's been doing it for 20 years, so and he deals with that inspector all the time. So it's just a simple process, but I think the city could actually end up in a better position, you know, and make more money with less time if
sure.
they simplify the process.
Yeah.
And have a plans examiner.
But the current county situation is similar. They have a sheet that's generic for garages. If you decide you want to build it 40 by 34 and it goes up to 34 by 34, then you have to do a little more. But, I mean, they have done some of that.
Well, as simple as Deschutes County does things, it'd be nice to do things even simpler. And
mm-hmm. Well, I'm not
fine.
Arguing. I'm just saying.
And but you can certainly do that, and that should go in the recommendation memo, mm-hmm. because some of that is the implementation of the code, how you process.
Yeah,
exactly.
No one here wants a 24 by 20 garage, though. They want an 80 by 100.
Well, and you have snow and everything else.
Yeah, you know,
it's more of the customer service philosophy that I think John's getting at.
Yeah. It is. It
you know,
is.
It doesn't matter how complex your code is.
Yeah,
how
it's
do you
really more
customers?
Than that.
Okay.
And it's something that, you know, the city wants that development. The person who wants to build it wants mm-hmm. the development. Everybody wants it. So mm-hmm. if both parties just work together to get it accomplished.
And not because I want to have the last word, but because I work for private developers too, there's nothing worse than leaving a city feeling like you didn't get service.
Mm-hmm.
And then you automatically think, I'm paying taxes and I'm getting this? And I think in Lapine, you guys have clearly instructed and advocated for the opposite. And that's a great place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the major things that we wanted to update you on. What we will do is look at consistency. For example, when we added the light industrial standards,
mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that the wording is consistent. If in one place we say accessory uses and in another place we use another terminology, we're going to fix that. Wording, typos, those kinds of things will come in this final smoothing effort. And we're going to be looking at it with a set of eyes as if we're doing an application. Does it make sense? So where you see, and on my computer is a good example,
mm-hmm.
you'll see how the track changes look.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you, you know, every little change we make from font to text. And then we'll just continue to do that and eventually have a clean copy, mm-hmm. but we'll keep you apprised.
And that same thing is in this copy with just without the red letter, mm-hmm. but that is this copy that you all have, mm-hmm. but just without the red lettering on the computer.
Yeah, it's just too expensive to print it in color.
And then you say you're going to have somebody else review it?
No, we're going to look at it with a different intent. Now we've got all the things in that a city needs to operate. Now we're going to look at it from, okay, if we were making an application, does it make sense? Is everything there? Are there any pieces from the functionality of it that are missing?
It's like, how do you make it user-friendly?
User-friendly.
To the greatest degree.
And so we need, as a planning commission, we need mm-hmm. to go back to this final draft, and if you will.
No,
and
we're going to do that. And then we will give you a final document that will look like this again.
It'll be a final document,
yeah,
not a draft.
Right.
If it's in our timeline, the end of December, January, I'm sorry, end of January.
It probably will be a little bit later because of we kind of got stuck on some bio-brain stuff.
How is our relationship with ELDC then during this process?
This will be a good time to bring up those issues. Let me get my notes, hang on. We've been in constant contact with DLCD because we want our current plan approved as soon as possible. And they've had some issues that relate to pieces that they want us to address in more detail, which isn't unusual. We're not too thrilled with the timeline, but we have to...
You're talking comprehensive plan and not zoning.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're still on agenda item number 7.
Yeah. Right, but it relates to zoning because they've asked us to make sure that these issues go into the zoning code.
Okay.
And we've talked about one, the riparian setback.
Mm-hmm.
They want that to be in there. And they want us to... Hang on.
When we achieved that, was that through the state or was that taken from the county?
The riparian?
Well, right.
Well, the state directed, through comments that we got on the comprehensive plan, because that they're working toward acknowledging that,
mm-hmm.
They said, well, here's some policy, here's some things we want you to add, change, tweak in the comprehensive plan. They said, and what came of some of those comments that they had on the comprehensive plan were, and that's something that you should think of considering in your zoning code that you're currently working on, like the riparian section.
Right.
So it's a matter of their review led to things in here now while we're working on it. Then we get to it sooner or later.
Does anybody know when the last floodplain map was developed?
1988.
Oh yeah, it was a long time ago.
19 state?
The floodplain's a federal map.
And the FEMA, but how about...
They rely on...
How about the state and the county?
They don't do any floodplain mapping.
How about the riparian mapping? State will have copy of that.
Well, they don't require... They don't do any riparian mapping. What they do is they say you have to have protection. And this is where it's a little gray.
Are you talking within the 500-year floodplain?
This is where it's a little gray as to, you know, there's a definite riparian area, but where that is you have a riparian, you can have a floodplain, you can have a riparian area, you can have a wetland. all in the same location, but all three different boundaries. And so what happens is, if you have a riparian area, it's a riparian corridor, it may not be floodplain or it may not be wetland, but it's intrinsic to the riparian corridor. It's influenced by the body of water that's there. Mm-hmm. You may have trees that are really, you know, growing in green. That's not wetland, but somehow they're being fed by the water and they're important to the riparian corridor. So if somebody's developing property, you'll have a, for example, setback is 100 feet from the riparian corridor. You'll have the planner that goes out there without any mapping having been done by the jurisdiction. They will do it on a case-by-case basis when the development is proposed. You know, it's one that was very arbitrary, and that Deschutes County does as well, and you don't have it here, is the setback from the edge of the canyon of the Deschutes River that you deal with a lot in the North County. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's not like any, you know, when you're, the cartoons where it drops straight off, you know, down into the canyon, you have, and so there always is a not an argument, but a debate ensues between a lot of times the property owner and whoever the planner is as to where the edge of the canyon is, because that determines how far back you build. So it's with the riparian corridor, it's somewhat like that, unless you go through and you definitively map it. But that entails the city hiring a consultant and mapping it, and you can get to different standards where you take the safe harbor and it's done on a case-by-case basis. And I guess that's what, you know, we're saying here is you have a small area. And if it's substantially developed out,
the one larger area though is
down in the town. Yeah, south of it.
That could be huge in the future. You know, Glenwood Acres is almost built out. Ken, you know, very bare lots in Glenwood Acres, like bare lot, just without a house on them.
5 or 6 or 7
bare lots. How about? But they're up off the river. I mean, there's none that are on that.
There's one on the riverside.
Okay,
so it's
99%.
Yeah,
do you live out there,
Kim? Yes.
Have you experienced when we have a harsh winter, any weird flooding? Does nothing happens? It stays in its channel pretty much, doesn't it? Okay.
And that's why I think in La Pine you have a pretty definitive line, even on the south side of town.
Our water table is about 8.5 feet, and right now we have ponds that were never there.
Wait till about a month.
Oh, it looks like a nice lake up there.
Come March.
It's beautiful.
Well, I could see we're going to get into a lot of this riparian business for the city. Is down south. Mm-hmm. If you see that big, huge floodplain going through a massive part of downtown La Pine. And there's a huge residential area to the left there. That's, I don't know how many acres that is, but there's quite a few there. And I don't foresee, you know, too much more development, but what is there, I mean, that's all residential. So those folks should be able to develop their residential properties. And that map right there, that map right there shows a very small portion than others that I've seen, and then in different areas. I mean, it seems like every few, 4 or 5 years, there's a different map.
Well, and it'll respect what's happening in the environment too. Changes are allowed in certain cases, and that can change the channel, but you don't have to worry about that so much right now, because you're going to transfer over the existing regulations, which have been working pretty well.
So you think that this planning commission would serve well to in the future develop on a case-by-case basis rather than to actually hire some engineer to map out the entire riparian areas in the plan?
There's not a definitive answer, but I think if you do what the county does now for the setback, you're going to be addressing what the state would say for a safe harbor, and then when applications come in, you get to look at them to double check and make sure things are met.
Because couldn't that engineering study be challenged anyway?
Sure. If somebody brings you better information, sure.
So why spend the money?
That would be our recommendation. Okay, that concludes the thing. The other stuff I have to talk to you about is more related to comp plan.
Okay. Okay. Let's move right on then to the 2010 Planning Commission self-evaluation. Now, we were going to come up with a form. Did we ever do that? It had some sort of yes, no, check mark. Otherwise, we can, without a form, we can certainly evaluate the 2010 performance of the Planning Commission. Because, you know, although it seems like we did quite a bit, there really wasn't a lot done other than developing the zoning ordinances.
We did a lot of work. We're finally coming to the culmination of it, but yeah, we've been working on it for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So it's,
we finalized the comp plan.
Yeah. You guys, if I could make an observation, I've worked with lots of planning commissions and some incredibly difficult ones where, you know, you're lucky to get out of the room with a head of hair. This planning commission has been invested in the community because we started with the comp plan and you're incorporating citizen comments and you're looking to the future. All very positive things. Mm-hmm. Planning commissions change when development applications are thrust before you. Mm-hmm. So right now, you've got good concepts and good foundation in place, a very good planning commission in terms of what your theme, goals, and objectives are. If I was to offer anything, I would make sure that every year you focus on goals and objectives and adopt those yourself so that you stay on track. Mm-hmm. And then if for some reason you get deviated, you can go back to that and say, okay, do we need to modify our goals and objectives? Or are we still on track and this issue that's come before us just doesn't fit with what we need to do right now? Because you'll have time management issues in the future. That's the only observation I would make.
Yeah. I would also add that we could use to... We had talked earlier on about building up a library, and we just need to actually use our 2010 budget and request that some items be bought, such as some reading material. We talked about a computer... that can be just used for planning purposes in the city. And a few other things. I written down somewhere, but those things I think we could do better in 2011 and to get those things in place so that we'll do a better job at educating new planning commissioners. We stand to gain two new commissioners, I certainly hope, in 2011. Unless Virginia has changed her mind, so that stays on.
pressure.
That will be quite a challenge to have three members of a five-member planning commission when the quorum is three. That would put a lot, you talk about pressure on the ones that... to make it maybe. So just to develop a little bit better, start to develop our own commission tools and educational.
We need to make a formal request. Is that what, the way we need to do it? Is to write up exactly what we need and present that to the city council?
Yeah, and the cost and all that.
You've done that. We received...
That's what I thought.
John's email, and we were going to proceed under... I thought we had a city credit card, but we have to use another route. Mm-hmm. So what we'll do is the people who sell the materials will see if they can't take an electronic check or a purchase order. But before we do that, we want to make sure the council knows what we're doing and authorizes it for the expenditure of budgeted items to support the Planning Commission. So you'll see that in memo form.
Okay. And this is, it's out of the budget, was already allocated to us for this year, right?
It isn't, for the fiscal year.
And then how are we doing on the want to revisit that every year. And, you know, like we have discussed, there may come a time when accelerated development happens where we will have to meet possibly twice a month. But right now, is there any recommendations as to the one meeting a month? How's it working out?
I think it's fine by me.
You think is it adequate? I mean,
yeah,
I guess the question would be, we need to be adequate to the city. And
yeah.
Is it adequate at this point?
At this point, yes.
I agree.
We can always call a special meeting if we need to.
Yeah. Right. I agree. We can do that. So, we don't have to have a vote. We can just recommend that ourselves to establish that. Patty, you'll know then that we will stay with our schedule.
Mm-hmm.
2011. Yep. Yep. We'll stay with that for now then. So.
Any more word on the comp plan from the state?
Yeah, we're under item 9.
Oh,
we're
under comp plan. Basically, right now, just self evaluation for the planning commission. I'm tempted to ask the public and those that are here, but because it says self-evaluation, folks are not invited to the party. But you do get to witness our struggles.
Would you like anything on the website that, you know, citizens, do you have comments about the planning commission? Submit them here.
Yeah, you know, we see very little public. Yeah. You know, the website may help us in that. It certainly hasn't helped us to get to the other planning commissioners, but possibly input from citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And then each citizen that responds to that will be automatically put into a pool of electors. So. But yeah, I mean, that might be good.
Might be a way of stimulating interest, if nothing else.
It's not unusual. A lot of cities do that.
Yeah.
And you take the good with the bad.
Sure.
You might get some crazy comments, but, you know,
sure.
If people are involved, it's just part of your citizen involvement program.
Can we have it so that we get the input and it's not necessarily like a blog or that it lists everyone's comments open to the public?
Certainly.
So that if there is something that's not appropriate,
it's
that we
can
have
an email to the city.
If something's profane, okay. You want to screen it a little bit.
Sure.
That's not unusual either.
My only comment is that I felt that we've accomplished what we've set out to accomplish in most cases, and I think the frustration for us has been that we would have liked to, you know, been able to have more say in different items that we're not in a position as a planning commission to actually make decisions at this time on.
Because you're advisory in nature.
Land use
yeah.
Development actions.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think as a group that we're looking forward to that, but mm-hmm. we have to get these things in place first, so we're working to do them. So I don't think mm-hmm. we can be too frustrated with our performance in that area.
When you get to that point and you're reviewing land use actions is when you'll start to see maybe a need for more than one meeting a month because mm-hmm. it'll be
right.
sensitive
mm-hmm. yeah.
and critical things.
Yeah, you can't keep awaiting.
Yeah.
You know, calling a special meeting, what are the requirements for time? You know, say if we're going along and we need to call a special meeting, what are the notification requirements and such for doing that?
Usually it's 48 hours.
48 hours.
And if it's an emergency, it's 24.
Okay.
And then when your procedures ordinance is in place for different types of applications, you'll need to follow a different set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have public notice mm-hmm. for different types of apps.
Yeah, I think we've done what we've set out promised here. It's been a very good year, and I'm proud to be on this commission. And now, number 9, discussion of 2011 goals, and also the comprehensive plan.
Do you want me to jump in, Jim?
I think, yeah, because I think a lot of our goals are to finish the zoning ordinances, you know, finish all the city ordinances and codes and ordinances, you know, to finish those, and I might add a goal would be maybe to further our education. The Orange League of Cities has a new winter workshop thing right here. I'm gonna apply for one that's in February. These courses are only usually a couple hundred bucks, and they fall in line with our budget, and you can't get enough education in the planning world, so I encourage those of us to attend as much of that training that we can. And so that would be a goal, to just further education. And we talked about purchasing some tools and some training materials.
Yep, build your resources.
And other than that, we hope that 2011 will bring a little bit more development to the city of Defiant.
What about?
It's got to be more than 2010.
The comprehensive plan, what are our goals?
Yeah, you have some tasks to bear under your programs. One thing I'd like to have you finish, if you remember, I took you through just kind of a mini charrette of the Pine Wayside, the big green chunk.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get that back to you in site plan form. And I'd really like to see you guys finalize that so it can be promoted, because that was something that you had talked about earlier as a way to capture economic development. It's sitting right there, and the best place to start is to finish the diagram that you worked on earlier. And then I think when you make those things visual, that's going to be very helpful. Another thing that's lingering a little bit is the billboard kiosk concept.
Mm-hmm.
In the sign code, we've talked about billboards, etc., and how we wanted to have some limitation or alternative. And again, that's more of a design issue that I'd like you guys to finish, so that you can respond to the public when the billboard situation becomes a little more interesting. Interesting is not the right word. Tempest.
Are you talking about a kiosk that's lower to the ground, or are you talking about the higher billboards?
It's an alternative to the billboards. It's lower to the ground. It serves more of a public purpose in addition to advertising things that billboards do today.
Because right now we have limited to the existing billboards that are in the city, right?
That's correct.
And that cannot be added on to the way we have that in the...
That's what you asked us to
our
do.
Draft. And so you're talking about then the... Are you talking about a kiosk to be used by private business? You're talking about like a city public kiosk?
I bought that old sheet.
Or a design standard for...
Remember when we talked about that.
Okay, now, and that's something for... Are we talking about for the city or for private use?
You can for like both.
Marketing? Oh, I see.
It can be a revenue generator for the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to phase out billboards that we find to be not consistent with the community character. But it still does the job. Billboards serve a purpose. The problem is they're terribly ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And people get a little worried about them as cities grow.
Mm-hmm.
And
what type of property can this, or should this, do you think, be built on?
Public property.
So if it's a revenue for the city, then it should be on. Do we, you know, my other question then is, does the city have property to build this kiosk right now?
In some cases you may. In other cases you may find that as you develop parks and places along the highway that are improved, you may put them there. It's a very early concept.
Here's one thing I'm trying to get at. You know, the Pine Wayside up there. As a really early development stage, could the city possibly go to BLM and not so much mention the 40 acres, but maybe just an acre turnaround area for the use of a city kiosk, you know, and that proposal might be interesting to the BLM in that it doesn't necessarily use that whole 40 acre concept, and then in at a later date possibly phase in into a larger area. You know, we could kind of develop some master plan ideas for that entire 40 acres. But I think to begin with, it'd be a perfect time for just kind of a larger turnaround area, a kiosk with marketeers paying the city to advertise in those things. It'd be a good revenue enhancer for the city.
Also, what about certain areas that we currently have bus service? Like the park ride.
Mm-hmm. You can combine those things. The purpose of bringing up the kiosk concept is, what can we do to still serve the traveling public that's being served now by billboards? Mm-hmm. Is there an alternative to billboards? And when we talked earlier, we talked about our choices. We just cut them off. Mm-hmm. And no more billboards. And we chose that as an option so that we have time to gel some of these ideas. Mm-hmm. If you did nothing, then billboards could be installed in many more places. And you may see that before these things get adopted. But is there an alternative? And we brought this forward as an alternative, and you were receptive to it. Where they go in the community probably still has yet to be decided. But the point was, do we have something besides these giant billboards that the community said, it doesn't really fit. Serves purpose, but it doesn't quite fit.
And, you know, I think really what we've heard is that we would just soon eliminate all these major tall billboards, and because that can't happen, or could happen maybe over a long period of time, that we absolutely need to have an alternative to them. There's nothing worse than going through the middle of the town and seeing nothing but large billboards.
I can think of something worse.
I
can picture a bunch of kiosks being damaged due to vandalism, and that would make us look pretty
bad.
Is
this a sign code you're working on right now?
We're just talking about billboards.
You don't really have to define. I mean, obviously they're going to go in a commercial zone. I mean, for sure. No, you're not going to put them in residential. And you really don't know where they're going to go at this point. I mean, they have to go. If you look at that, they have to go into some place the public has already stopped. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between a billboard and that. I mean, a billboard, you're going by at 50, and you see it, and it says motel, turn left.
Right.
That you have to be stopped at a rest area or a bathroom, and then you go up and you spend 5 minutes looking at all these little signs. So, you know, the fact is, you're not going to have a lot of kiosks because the people traveling the highway couldn't see those kiosks at 25 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. But that's what I was saying.
So
it would be in an area where the public in general is already traveling.
And you have to have it in our code to put a kiosk in a rest area. I mean, wouldn't they be allowed anyway? I mean, they would. I mean, this is basically a little cover, and they, you know, you see those at all rest areas. They have, or not all, but some.
Yeah, it's more of a concept discussion. It's not meant to be perfect right now, but it's something when you're talking about your goals. What's going to happen when more billboards come up, and how are you going to deal with it?
But you said there's a cap right now. What you guys have done is placed a cap.
Yes.
On the number
billboards, the traditional big large
billboards
on the existing right now.
So. In our wording, is it that they're capped at that number?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Are they allowed to move them?
Yes. Subject to a permit.
Mm-hmm. And then they're also transferable to different owners and all that.
Okay. We're not going to stop an ownership change. It's not in our interest to do so.
How many billboards do we have?
Six.
We have six.
Just had a new one in the past 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Questions?
There's a number of us have always thought about having a couple of poles in the center of town that you put up a banner across you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we came very close at one time.
City, like an entrance like they have in Redmond.
Well, like
big entrance.
In the middle of town, you mm-hmm. know, frontier days, rodeo, yep. that kind of stuff. So.
Yep.
So is there... Do we have
ODOT, isn't it? Isn't that the, aren't they the ones that
it's coordinated between both entities?
No, it's legal. We got very close, but mm-hmm. we just mm-hmm. couldn't find the post. We got the land and all that kind of stuff mm-hmm. ready, and the people to pour the cement and all that kind of stuff. It was ready, but we couldn't find the money or the sign or the poles. But I wouldn't rule that out.
We've had a great deal of discussion. Mr. Mayor, there on an entrance sign like that, and we were very favorable to it. And matter of fact, you know, the new Ford Foundation Core 2 group, that was something that we had discussed, and another project was picked. But you know, has everybody seen the Redmond, the new Redmond, the wrought iron looking mm-hmm. Entrance sign? You know, to me, that shows a great deal of pride. It actually slows traffic down, I think, and would take away this strip, this 55 mile an hour strip we have going through our town right now. Concept. It would take that away, and I think it's a wonderful idea, and I can't wait till we do something like that. But you know, I think it can be done classy. Redmond's, you know, ours may not look exactly like Redmond, but Redmond's looks pretty classy. The old concept, I think, of the two big logs, you know, with the banner strewn between them, I think that probably isn't timely. That used to be, you know, the old lupine and stuff, but I can't wait to see a real nice entrance sign. And we even discussed in CORE too, we discussed it instead of dealing with ODOT, which is always real fun, to put it on Huntington Road so that as you drive, you know, just in off of the ODOT setback on Huntington, so that as you drive, in any direction you drive by, like by the little Centennial Park right now at Salve, that you would see it. And it would still have the effectiveness, but we wouldn't have to deal with ODOT. So we talked about that, too. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we were talking about the fact that we would like to see some field trips to some areas.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, just, I know I'm leaving, but...
Or maybe not.
That would be awesome.
Sometimes things like this, the workshops that they have, those aren't feasible for me, personally. I would like to see more of the information that when you guys go to the workshops to come back and have like a special work session to go over what you learned.
Right.
So that, or maybe even training sessions that are, you know, just like a work session, more of that available for those of us who can't travel.
When John and I went, I did do a report to the city, and you were leaving, I gave one to Linda, but at the time, but the city does have a copy of that, so.
Yeah, that's good.
And there's a good topic coming up that I think a work session would be appropriate, which is the corridor plan. The contents of that corridor plan are going to be so important for what happens to Lapine.
Absolutely.
And, of course, the next step is the TSP, but when you talk about things that can instantly improve a community and traffic calming and a sense of presence, that corridor plan is going to talk about some things that will improve intersections, not just for traffic flow, but for pedestrians and how the community can look. So I'm just going to throw this out there. If there's a pedestrian crosswalk system or a roundabout traffic calming system, a lot of those things have an artistic feel too. So when that corridor plan comes through, we're going to want to walk you through that because it has planning implications. Did I see a hand up? Or would you just?
Yeah, I just, you're talking about having some kind of training here. you need to look at what LLC does for bringing training on site. That's that's a common thing they do. So if there's a issue about who can and can't go, we've had them here. Last time I was on the council, we had the new counselors training.
One.
Yeah. So that that may be something you want to look at. It's there.
Yeah, it is. They you contact them here, and they'll make those arrangements. You just have to let them know what you want, and advance notice, and everything, and they'll do that. Just the next thing that has anything to do with planning is in February 22nd and May 24th. First one in Kaiser, next one in Medford, is Oregon Planning Procedures. Now, it actually walks through from handing out the application to making a decision, finally completing the file. This is actually like what our Community Development Department goes through to on the Oregon Planning, on a planning application. That would be a good one for planners and planning commission and has counselors and mayors and everybody listed in there, but that's the next really good one.
The opportunity to present bills to the legislature ends, I think, February 2nd. Mm-hmm. And there are several things that Chris Telfer and I believe Gene Wisnett, Chris Telfer and Gene Wisnett have presented that relate to planning. Mm. It's important for you to know that because it all comes, it dribbles down to us. Mm-hmm. If you can, get on your computers and check those House bills or presentations for bills out. It's on the Oregon.gov website. And these are critical because they have to do with transportation and how land use is implemented. And you'll hear us talk more about that later. In the interest of time, I'd like to get through some of the comp plan comments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we've presented our data to DLCD, and it's been there for many months, and they're going through their process. And we had a meeting recently where they finally got down to asking us to change a few things to make sure that it's consistent where they want to go as the state. And I want to go over those with you. And James was with us at the meeting, and I want you to jump in case I miss something. The one thing they asked us to do in Chapter 5 is separate out the responses to Goals 5, 6, and 7. Natural resources, what's 6? I always forget 6.
Is land, that air, water.
Yeah. Air quality and other natural resources like water and wildlife. So that's easy to do. We can separate that out and make sure that
we had those all. If you go back through the comprehensive plan, that chapter, because they're all related. You have historic natural resources, land, air, water, and then natural hazards.
Mm-hmm.
And they just wanted us to separate them out.
Mm-hmm.
So where we wanted you to make it smaller, you guys, they want you to make it bigger.
They think it makes it clearer. Some of
it's a style.
I'm
just
but it is. Some of it's a style thing. Some of it, there's some substantive stuff, and some of it is a style thing where you're working with somebody else critiquing your documents. So.
But it's basically nothing different than what we...
There are a few things. For example...
in the riparian section.
Yeah, in the riparian section, they said, put your code stuff in. Recognize that the county's wetland inventory wasn't specific enough for... this lower Lapine area, so that's got to be a work program for the future. That's new. So that will be in there. I'm not worried about that. Make sure that the zoning ordinance contains a conditional use permit system for those setback areas. We've done that. Define safe harbors where needed. And we talked a little bit about that. Further strengthen the energy sources area and the big chunks of land to the east of the city we have reserved for sewage treatment plant expansion, wildfire protection area, future energy production, because solar biomass, those kinds of things require larger sites. So keep those protected. Don't let them turn into subdivisions. So they want that language strengthened. So it's slightly new. Let's see. The FEMA stuff we just talked about. Okay. Then, just some language changes. Implement the community fire protection plan. We have that language in there, but they want it more specific. I'm not worried about that. Rule 12, this is more about transportation. They're asking us to strengthen the narrative, to talk about the fact that we are going to move forward with the TSP. We have written an email to Rick saying it's time to go forward with the TSP. There's money budgeted in the council budget. We have to have a TSP. We can't go forward as a community without it. So they want us to talk about that more. I'm just looking at notes.
Would it be beneficial for us to focus on the comprehensive plan and get it knocked out before we, or can we still just continue to work on the zoning?
Yeah, everything that DLCD is asking for is tweaks. Mm. Will lead up to their final acknowledgement, which we anticipate to be a partial acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that. They believe that we have more work to do for housing inventory analysis and the urban growth boundary. They're having some trouble understanding that our urban growth boundary is the same as our city limits and how our growth projections match. We have less growth projected than we have land. Much more land than we need inside the UGB.
To accommodate the 20-year population.
Right, which isn't all that much. In 20 years, you're growing less than 1,000 people. And that's what the population...
So would they just be satisfied if you cut off the part that already belongs to BLM? I mean, I don't know.
It's enough.
I'm just looking at this map, and it's like, well, most of that is...
It's from a city planning issue, I think you want to control lands that are going to come to you and support your infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And even though it looks like a lot of empty space now, mm-hmm. there are good reasons to have that mm-hmm. under the same jurisdiction mm-hmm. instead of a split mm-hmm. jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And we
but is that their argument?
Yeah, we don't really know yet because they haven't given us a list.
They've had this for... They've had this, I feel like when I say this, well actually it was by the end of June, so we've had it for 8 months and we still haven't gotten comments back on these two sections. And so Deborah will talk more about the partial acknowledgement. But there the concept, Pine Incorporated with this area, and so I haven't seen anywhere in the state of Oregon, to my knowledge, where you have a city that has an urban growth boundary that's actually smaller than the city limits. That mm-hmm. causes problems, but they're having a problem with that concept because the rules say that your urban growth boundary can only be large enough to support the needed land for the population growth in 20 years. And we're coming back saying, well, you know, what Deborah just said, there's a lot of other reasons to have that land in. Mm-hmm. Well, what I think what we're going to end up doing is saying, okay, there will maybe be some areas within the city, and we've already talked about that in the document, that will be reserved and won't be mm-hmm. viable for development. Those mm-hmm. areas that are designated forest, if you go through the, mm-hmm. the comp plan and zoning code, we haven't said you can't build houses there, you can't right. accommodate, but they're allowable for energy needs and things like that, which also support the community. So it's more of a, and they haven't done an acknowledgement in, of a new comprehensive plan for a city in many years.
So could they accept that language by just saying these lands are reserved? Yeah, and
is that how we
changing the urban growth boundary?
That's what we did, yes. And it's not enough. So, first of all, James is right. This is the first city they're really sinking their teeth into. We're getting some overflow from the fact that Ben's.
Well, that's what I was. That's what yeah. I was saying. You know, we're close enough to Ben that you know they're. I mean, they're. You know, they're marching in this area right now anyway. So, I mean,
it's tantalizing for the staff to sink their teeth into this.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that they're not buying our arguments on density. And so we're going to have some back and forth to justify why we believe our density figures, which are tripling our density today over a 20-year period, mm-hmm. aren't good enough. And we have shown them everything. It makes sense to our local DLCD reps, who are fabulous. Mm-hmm. It's just that we have some people in Salem who
right.
are still cutting their teeth on the information we've
sent
them.
That's why my point I was trying to make about the establishing or working to a final state on zoning and codes when we don't even have a comprehensive plan.
Well, they work together, and you don't want to lose time. You wouldn't want to stop for the 8 months that they've not responded to the data we've sent them.
They have to approve your zoning code anyway, and that's why we wish we would have gotten comments back. But we're getting them now, that the things we would have incorporated into the zoning code a long time ago, like the riparian stuff, had we gotten those comments. I think, there's a lot of factors that are going into their thinking in Salem, is that they're thinking they're going to approve an urban growth boundary that has three times the density of what Lapine is today, mm-hmm. Over 20 years, but far less density than what they like to push in a lot of other communities. Okay, well, that
and that's what we want.
Exactly.
That's why I...
Well, also, the growth boundary, the size of the urban growth boundary. Not saying it's all bend, but there is some cover your behind that goes on, in as much as if they approve this urban growth boundary with a large mm-hmm. area, larger than what is needed, even mm-hmm. though it's commensurate with the city limits,
mm-hmm.
that it's a large area, way larger than what you need for the population growth. And on the back end, Bend is saying, ours is, we're thinking we justified it, and mm-hmm. you're giving us a hard time. So they don't want to get that backlash. And so there are other factors that play into some
of
that.
Communication, what then can you say, just be positive in that, that the Lapine city government is moving forward and is very united.
Yes.
And these types of things to where...
And their director told me yesterday, I met with them in a different meeting, and after the meeting and during the meeting, he made it clear that he's going to work with us. He doesn't want to delay
mm-hmm.
us. So a partial acknowledgement is still an acknowledgement.
Right.
It's not unusual. Having some tasks that we may have to arm wrestle mm-hmm. with, I don't find that unusual. It's disappointing, but it's kind of how the world works with DLCD.
They're saying that everything except urbanization, the urban growth boundary, and housing, they want to make themselves comfortable with it. Everything else will move forward and be acknowledged.
Well, they do. We talked about the trade-offs as far as multiple housing and that mm-hmm. sort of thing, and that was in there. I mean, they're not understanding that some areas are going to be higher density.
They understand all that. What they'd like us to do is adopt a safe harbor that overall would have a minimum density at the planning horizon of 4 units per acre, which is one more unit per acre than we have today, and assume for UGB analysis 6 units per acre. We're not there. We have 1.2 units today and maybe 14 apartment units or attached housing units. It's too bad that we have to do this, but it's just the wrangling that occurs. Let's see. Zone to allow 8 units, we're there. In our multifamily zones, if you remember, we have a great range of density options.
Right.
And we plan those in the transition areas and some of the higher density areas.
And part of some of this, too, is that they believe in redevelopment of land within the urban growth boundary rather than expanding your urban growth boundary. Mm-hmm. So, So, for example, when you look at the north end of the Pine and you have larger 1-acre lots, see, the thought process is that one unit per acre is not urban density. 6 units per acre is. So they would say before you expand or before you create an urban growth boundary that is this big, why don't you look at opportunities for redeveloping some of that land? Well, that's easier said than done when you go in and you tell the people that live in that neighborhood, the goal is over 20 years, we're going to change the whole character of your neighborhood as it's been for the past 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
Some people look at it, though, my property.
I'm thinking of pressing this.
I've heard that question many times.
I mean, they're not the ultimate authority. They can't be. This is Lapine.
Well, and like when we went to the meeting, all of the rules and decisions are made for Portland, Salem, Eugene, all those places.
Just hand us the paper and do it, huh?
But now that, you know, I think, and it's easy to go down that road, but because, but there is good basis for a lot of it. Part of it is if you, rather than having it so dense that it becomes chaotic in your city, is densification can lead to less infrastructure that you have to build, reduction in costs, reduction in water sewer streets. You know, you end up, if you have denser areas, people can walk to the store, walk to work. So there are positives, and there are a lot of positives to what they want.
Well, in China, they live right above.
But it's like, where do you find the balance? And I think that's what we're doing with them, is trying to find that balance.
It's what we have to go through, and they are the ultimate authority on whether we get acknowledgement. And so the meeting they have scheduled is the first meeting in March, and we're just getting some of this data to
so we're on track. You'll tweak it a little bit. You'll go back first of March. You'll come back.
There's one last thing I want to talk to you about, because in order to convince them about how density will occur, I've got to talk about Kegel, because it fits in with the TSP. Do you remember that we had a discussion about Kegel?
Right.
Not too many connections for streets for people.
Yeah.
Right. Or formal connections. When we do the TSP, one of the things that we want to ask the traffic engineer to do is to give us a shadow plat of how we could have better connections here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you have better connections, you have properties that have more opportunities for frontage, what does that mean? Opportunities for subdivision. Should people want to do that, and if there's an opportunity? That's one way that the state can be partially satisfied that we have some redevelopment options.
Yeah, because that's such a large portion right there that if that was done, that they may just die off on the whole rest of it, because you see how large that portion is up the cable.
And this works to our advantage. We all know that this contains more land than the 20-year need.
Right.
Does it? Does that take an engineer stamp to send that back to DLCD?
No.
Then why can't
we just come up with a scenario and map out a possibility? Because, you know, we had already discussed it, you know, a road east and west right down through the middle of it.
Here's for example, just out of curiosity. What about, do we have any way of knowing, for example, Deschutes County tax-wise, are there any properties in there that are possibly going to be repossessed by the county, that could be possibly donated to the city and roads and infrastructure put in there?
I don't know, and we won't know. But we can make it a program. Remember how the comp plan's laid out? Goals, policies, and then the action items are the programs? So we can tell the state that our TSP is going to deal with this. That's all we have to do.
That's all we have to do. That's what I'm saying. Just, you know, draw
a
diagram and say, this is what we plan to do in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
And then maybe that'll satisfy them.
I'm not telling you this isn't frustrating. It is frustrating. And there's always more to the story, and it turns into something that doesn't help us right now. We just have to get through this.
Well, we're close. I mean, March, you know, that could possibly be close to being final by March, and that's exciting.
We're working hard to get through this. There's a lot of stuff to do by Friday morning.
It's more than likely that by the time we get to the meeting in March for acknowledgement of all the other sections except the two, that we'll have comments back and be working on the other two, so that if we get to their next meeting, we've addressed it.
Yeah.
Right.
It can be very frustrating, but you know, I have a harder time with it sometimes than Deborah does.
You know, we could get into a gossip session.
I know, but it's
just
not
really get you angry. But the thing is, we've just got to keep moving forward. Let me put it this way. Some cities spend tens of years getting through this issue. We've been making good progress, and the director himself told us yesterday we are here to help. And hopefully that message filters down as we get closer.
Do they accept this trade-off of different areas, higher densities and some? Do they accept that as an overall population?
They have a hard time with the math. That's where they're starting to come apart.
because, you know, we could easily just put more numbers in some areas.
They do, but, you know, you have to do things, for example, like Deborah's talking about the cable subject, you have 1 acre lots in there. That, what it is, it's not, you don't say we're going to go back and redevelop this to 6 units per acre, but you provide, when you go back through the zoning ordinance, you look at that zoning, opportunities for people to build like an accessory dwelling on their property, which bumps up the density of people living there.
Sure, along with arterials.
But it doesn't change the whole character of the neighborhood.
Right. And our local people are really good. They work real close with us. We talk with them daily. They're on my speed dial, your speed dial as well.
She backed into my car.
Yeah, she did. their story. But the problem
is, a couple months right there.
If we say we're going to be denser in certain areas, we still have the problem of you've got too much land.
Uh-huh.
And so they have to understand our culture.
Right,
and that's a hard thing because that's not written anywhere. It's written in our documents.
Well, it's written
in
the
state laws.
Well, maybe that's where the director can help us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Make sure that we walk down with him as we explain this to the people who work for him.
Yes. His deputy was here and we had a meeting, and Rick was there too, and we talked to them and said, here's what we need to accomplish, and everybody's shaking their heads, yes. It's just the process.
It seems like they're just, because of every jurisdiction is different, and this is, for the reasons we just discussed, is a little bit different yet in brand new city, but they're being careful on these two issues, because these are the biggest issues that affect every other community.
Right. So, yeah, they don't want to set a precedent.
Exactly.
We used to call it area practice, and it's hard to take away from once you've established it. And, you know, we understand. But you know, the trade-off with the higher densities, we can put all the densities we want in here and just put them in trade-offs. In that cable, you guys feel free to draw a line east and west through the middle of that and put some art. Put a few arterials in there, and then show some higher densities on some of those street corners. That's a huge area right there. That could.
And your transition zones will absorb that. But the problem is, the more we do that analysis, the worse it gets for the UGB answers. Because if you're making things denser on lands that are more constrained, then the question is, what are you doing with all this big stuff to the east?
Mm-hmm.
It's still hanging out there. So we'll do more narrative, we'll explain more, see if just doing that action gets us over the hump.
Has the question never been asked, or could it be asked that our UGB is our city limits? I mean, period. So that creates a situation in itself, and are you guys having a problem with this?
That
because
is
it doesn't exist throughout Oregon?
That is what they're having a problem with.
Yeah.
I mean,
usually your city limits are smaller and you're able to go about it.
Sure, that's not the case. That's why you can look at it.
That's what they're having a problem with.
The city was incorporated with a large city limit.
Mm-hmm.
And we said during incorporation and post incorporation, jurisdiction should be uniform, not split, so that the city has control over its own area. That's the biggest reason to make your UGB connect with the city limits line. It's a very simple, elegant answer, but they're not quite buying that.
I mean, when you can, you know, the only area that I really see that has a big question mark is the forest of BLM lands to the east.
And I don't want you to get rid of that because those are large lot industrial areas.
And that's, you know, that's the only really area that I can see that you'd have a tough time explaining. And what I'm saying is, you know, can you, well, of course, we've already done quite a bit of work with that, but, you know, if we were to put a big oval track or something in there and called it future BMX track or something. I mean, you know, I can see where, you know, they have a problem seeing just bare land that isn't slated for development. But then they also have a problem when you want to develop more land.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
and we have not left out of the equation that if we need to expand the UGB to the south because it makes sense to have things near our existing industrial area, Does that make sense? Yes. Well, we may have to do some horse trading at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We're not there yet.
Right.
Well, it seems like we're being punished for having a little bit of forethought, you know, about what we would like to see happen way in the future. I mean, there was a lot of thought that that went into this.
Yeah.
And it seems like we're being penalized.
If I boiled it down to two issues, Deborah, what I mean, do you think, in your opinion, would be wrong to say? One is that they want some tweaking, bumping up of the density. And second is, make us comfortable that the land that you have inside the UGB, if it's more than what you need for population growth, how do you ensure that it's not going to be developed for housing purposes or, you know, those two issues?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, don't. Not necessarily you can't do it, you make us comfortable with why you're doing it.
Yes. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I would like you to finalize the wayside, and we'll beef up the documentation and narrative on why we need to preserve those areas. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got BLM stuff in process, you've got sewer expansion, absorbing the districts, all that stuff leads to good planning for the east side.
And the reality is, you know, the railroad that separates all that out is a big, giant obstacle that will impact the ability to develop that area for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well said.
So
really, by next month, we need to just plot that out and give you some ideas to work with.
We're going to beef up the narrative because we anticipate they've given us a heads up that they don't like our responses or they want more. We haven't seen the final letter yet. We just have notes on the other goals, but not the two big ones, housing and the UGP. And Rick, I was telling him that the agency has had meetings with us and assures us they're going to work with us every step of the way. Yesterday at the meeting at the county, same thing was said by Richard himself. I don't envy them the challenges of communication from Richard down to our reps. There are a bunch of people in between we have to get through.
Was that going to the commission in March or how that?
First meeting is what they're proposing. The first meeting in March, that we're on the agenda for that.
But we're just getting notes from them and we haven't got our final notes on goals 10 and 12.
5 weeks? When's their meeting in March?
They have to have stuff to the commission 30 days in advance. They can push it a little. And we're going, we'll work as fast as we can get data. But
we just got comments a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
Were they meeting to the next meeting? Were they able to ask for some extensions?
They possibly can move it. We've also asked them for documentation on compliance. And Darren is working on that as we speak. So we're getting something from them so that we're not out of compliance. Remember the rule said 4 years from the date of incorporation?
Mm-hmm. I know.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've asked for an extension, and we've said, that's fine, but help us and document this compliance issue so that nobody can come back.
Do they only meet every 2 months?
Once a month.
Do they meet monthly?
I believe it's.
I was thinking maybe it was every other month, but
I could be wrong on that.
Well, a little more after March, and hope for the best, I guess.
It's a little disappointing.
But you know what the citizens want. So, item number 10, Planning Commission reports and staff update. Gloria, have a report?
Yeah. Not really. I did want to make a comment. Last meeting and in the minutes, you mentioned the Ford Foundation working on the Centennial Park.
Mm-hmm.
That name has not been decided yet, and I just wanted to note that we're really in the very early stages of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at this point, there really isn't anything to present to the public. So,
yeah.
You do realize we already have a Centennial Park,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's. I think the. If Com Lodge, we have a Centennial Park, and so there seems to be a consensus that we don't want more than one So, if that's the case, then we'll come up with a new name, and we will call it Old School City Park, in which case...
Maybe.
It is in the middle of the city. So, anyway, Linda, do you have any?
No, I do not.
Regine?
I have one question. Since I thought we were going to be a little further along and like forwarding this, we're not forwarding this on to the city council at this time.
Yeah, we're going to prepare the memo that you asked us to prepare with some of the philosophical issues, do the final smoothing, and we're ready to roll.
Okay, so we don't need to vote on it or anything, so...
We've already done that.
Okay. Then I'm done. I guess.
And we'll, every draft we do in smoothing wise, we'll send that to you. So there's a good step-by-step process.
Okay, so I guess this is my last meeting.
I remember you said you would hang on until we got stuff done.
I thought we were, you said this is being, this final is going to be.
You'd be with us until we were through the council.
Well, I said
once we sent this on to the council, and you just told me we're sending this on to the council.
Is that the only vacancy we're going to have?
We have two.
Resident
vacancy.
We're
going to
arm wrestle later.
Who else is missing?
Well, we're going to get Virginia Brett Favre's phone number, and they're going to counsel each other on retiring.
Let me just have a question.
But if it is, Virginia, we thank you very much for your help and your service to this community.
Yes,
it's been very appreciated.
And hopefully we'll continue.
So we have two vacancies and one person missing tonight.
No, we only have five of council. We have five.
There's five?
We just have one.
You're not a member, Don?
No.
No,
he's on the
committee. Dennis Davis had to retire from the committee because of health.
Okay.
And we just haven't replaced him, and now we have a second replacement.
And they both have to be city residents.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do.
Yes.
Under current ordinance, they do. Okay, so... If there's nothing further, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Is there an opportunity for the public to say anything?
Well,
I know you don't have it on your agenda.
Well, you know what, Dan, go right ahead on because I just
want to see if there's some, if I could get clarification on some things.
Mm-hmm.
Don, you said something about that wayside being 40 acres, and from here, if that wayside thing is all that green, that's way more than 40 acres. I just wonder.
Yeah, it is more than 40 acres.
Well, it's 60, isn't it?
It's 160.
No, that's...
Oh, 160.
Yeah.
When I get 40.
Okay, and I'm sure this is all covered, but is the state using that acreage in our whole compilation of ratios?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken that out?
Not, I don't know.
No, they included it.
That shouldn't be used as... Right. Potential lot development.
That's right.
That's where we have to show that to the state, because if we don't, the state will assume that we're going to sneak in residential.
That's why I'm saying it's more than 40 acres. So
but it is open space.
Make sure we take this out of the
equation. And it has been in our inventory.
Okay, that's what I was just asking.
If we have to restate that or point it out or highlight it again, then we're just going to have to do it.
Okay, and then same applies for all of this area. Is that out of this equation?
Inside the city limits.
Floodplain.
Yeah.
Floodplains.
We took out constrained lands based on a formula, and in some, see where the floodplain is at the bottom?
Mm-hmm.
That's still developable land as long as you follow the firm and the...
On state wetland registry, it can't be...
Not on the wetlands,
well,
but in the
floodplain. Well, you do fill and removal in the wetlands if you meet certain mitigations, so you can still develop it, but you have to mitigate. But it's very difficult to do. There's a lot of land, so if you could take that out, or if not, and then...
Stop there. Can we do that?
Those guys.
Never. that we, even though you can say build it up 2 feet and do all that, but if with all the land here, you figure that probably won't happen.
Yeah.
So to get the numbers right, could we argue to take that out?
That's tweaking.
If that's that land looking behind over here, mm-hmm. there's no one building down in any of that.
But there's some of that does have building on it already.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that is tax lots that somebody has paid for, and that was mm-hmm. part of what...
Years ago.
Yeah, that was part of what that measure was about, taking your rights.
Oh, that's right. Taking this type of legislation.
Okay, and then just like she said, some of that, if like yellow or any of that residential stuff, have you based your lot inventory on, like, what is grown there, or on a ratio of 4 or 6 per acre or something, or how does that, I mean, there are some existing legal lots of record,
right,
that are much larger, undeveloped, but much larger than what is likely to be developed.
And the analysis we went through on the buildable lands inventory, and I'm happy to get you a copy, we took out constrained lands, things that couldn't be developed, took them out of the equation. We did an analysis of how much of each lot generally can be built on and how much is typically dedicated for right-of-way. Mm-hmm. It was pretty generous in those cutbacks. And that's good for us. We may have to do more and find other ways to reduce that acreage. But there is, at some point, you can't cut into to the bone any further, and we have to rely upon what the citizens told us in some of the meetings and say, look, we're not going to 6 times the density today in 20 years. That may be what the state wants as a safe harbor, but you're just not going to see that here. It's not practical. And we may have to list more narrative reasons why that's not practical. There's only so much I can do with the math before it doesn't make any sense at all.
Okay, so I guess my question is,
Sure, thank you.
This is my property over here, and these are city block sizes, but it's previously been divided up in 6,000 square foot lots, but it doesn't show that on here because they've been consolidated into half block sections.
Did you count each one of those 6,000 foot lots in your inventory, or did you just count the two parcel blocks? You know,
both. We looked at acreage and we looked at developable parcels.
Okay.
And the spreadsheet inventory shows how many lots we have in the city. And then those that are...
And legal lots of record.
Yeah. And then those that are constrained, which is a term that planners use to say it can't be developed for this purpose, or there's some other factor that makes it more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of reasons that things are constrained.
So it sounds like we really don't know.
We don't really know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just looking for ways to get your balance there by what we already have.
Yeah.
And I just, not knowing what you've gone through, I just was trying to get clarity on that. So.
Yeah. I'll send you the buildable lands inventory so you can see that. We've tweaked quite a bit. If there's more to be done, we're happy to do it, but not at the risk of some of the things the citizens...
They like to go by acres, but you can use, like, constrained lots, the particular lot data,
mm-hmm.
compiled into an overall acreage calculation to pull from the big number of acres down to what's actually developable.
Okay.
So it uses individual lots for purposes of calculating acres. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, it sounds like you can come up with an average in the end.
How far off are we from what the state wants us to be?
We're at 3 units per acre for the 20-year bounding horizon. Their safe harbor is 6 to 8.
So another question. Did you, a little while ago, did you say that we were going to try to have that the 100-foot setback from riparian?
That's what the county does today. We're going to transfer that.
But we're not county, we're city. Does that not make a difference?
It does, but the state has what they call a safe harbor. To get through the state process, it makes sense, and from a Measure 39 or 49 process, to transfer over that same setback. It only affects a very small portion of the
But it'll still be on a case-by-case basis, though.
Yes.
So that's what I was wondering, if you decided to go be case kick.
Yes.
Because all of a sudden, if it's 100 foot, then you can just expand this line.
No, I'm not worried about that area.
Yeah.
The only 100 foot area is right here.
Okay, thank you.
Just right here.
Like you said, right, that was wetland.
Yeah.
In this particular case, the setback is
it can be.
This particular area. Down here, there may be some other areas that will be reviewed on a case-by-case basis. Okay. This is the most critical.
If you want to go beyond what the case-by-case basis is, which is what the county does right now in transferring over their setbacks, then you get into and the county's is based upon some data they did, but you have to do an individual study within your community and to determine where the true edge is. The value, as a general statement, the value, not dollar value, but value of that wetland in that riparian area to try to justify then maybe smaller or bigger setbacks to the state. And so that's something the Pine can take on in the future. And they even told us that. They said, if that's something you want to do in the future, you can take the safe harbor now, just keep things as they are, move this code and the comp plan through the process, and if that's something that the city moves as higher up on the priority list, they can spend money on that and do that.
Yeah. Okay. Hire consultant. 100-foot top of bank, and the Little Deschutes is pretty channelized.
Okay, I just heard that area. You were also defining it as wetland and floodplain.
We talked about a variety of things,
so
it's not all
energy. Well, there's safe harbors from wetlands and from riparian areas and from.
Well, what I'm just saying is that wetlands, a delineation is already onerous on your property. If you add 100 feet to that, you really lose a lot of property.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just, I just need to know for my own personal planning. All of a sudden, you can take about 40 lots away from me by going 100 feet from wetland delineation.
Yeah, and our language is a little different, so.
How many lots are we off? If it's how many, because I don't know how many acres of residential, so if it's we're at 3 and they want us at 6 to 8, how many lots are we talking, or how many houses are we talking?
Well, see, this is the challenging thing. They're saying on one hand your UGB is too big.
Well,
we're saying
the city was incorporated this size. It is what it is.
Bravo! that's exactly our argument that they appear to be having difficulty with. Even if we say we're going to go higher density, it doesn't help us justify a bigger UGB because you're putting more on.
Well, look, basically, it's from towns with a road in the middle of them for 3 miles, and that makes you a lot of UGB, lots of acres.
And
you can't do anything about it.
The railroad. We don't want to be developing a real railroad. That's a real problem
right now.
Yeah, and they have a problem with the large expanses of land still designated forest within the city because it's typically, it's farm and forest is a rural lands designation. And so, but that's what we've used as justification, and when you look at the comp plan and zoning, it can't be developed. We're treating it in the sense like it's rural land. It just happens to be, it was incorporated as part of the city. So what do you do?
They're going to have to understand we're not going to fit into their template because we're a brand new city. And
Richard is saying we'll work with you. Yeah. It's in between our local reps and Richard that we're having the issues.
Well, but Richard is their boss.
Yeah.
So to a degree, you've got to give you lip service. I mean, Richard is the boss. So if he agrees with you like you're saying, he can tell his folks that's how they want it done.
Yeah. I hope so.
So
he sets down with him and tells him that.
Well,
our submission should speak for itself.
I was going there and I would have discussed it differently probably, but I, because the sewer water meetings had me overrun yesterday, I couldn't get there.
But part of it is that this plan that goes up there is not going to go to him. It's going to go to the staff.
No, he has it. He has it.
The comp plan.
Yeah.
But the staff, he relies on his staff for comments.
Of course.
But boy, it sounds like your number difference is so great. How do you get there? This isn't tweaking.
And it won't matter because the bigger issue of the UGB only gets compounded if you try to do more density. So we have to rely upon the reasons why this boundary makes sense. Incorporation being the biggest one, the nature of the layout of the community, why we have those areas preserved. They're not going to be rampant subdivisions because we're not going to let them. And those are the things that they have to feel more confident about. They just don't feel that confident because it doesn't fit the typical model.
Well, because they're taking the residential acres and doing the division.
Yeah, they're just doing the math saying, well, wait a minute.
This is how many houses you need.
Mm-hmm.
This is how many acres you have and dividing it, and it comes into 3 per acre. I mean, that's
And we would like to one per acre.
And they want,
reduces even the
and they want us to get to 6 or 8.
Yeah. Yeah. We still can't
do that with the acreage you have.
Well, I mean, by March, you know, I think that there'll be, I mean, that's several weeks, so.
where does the agriculture play in this? Because that's what that is out on the east side out there, isn't it? I mean, those forest lands are agriculture. Well, that's really not it. They're forest lands.
Agriculture
is a different
Yes, but not much.
Cities don't have agricultural land, do they?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. You try to keep those things outside the city because of the conflicts.
That's why we have designated, well, if you look on here, this green area where we have sewage treatment area right here, it's a huge, large area. Yeah. If you have it in your city, but it's designated for a specific purpose to support the rest of your city. You don't take it out of your city.
Yeah.
And realistically, do we think we're going to solve the outside city sewer issues without involving our sewage treatment plant?
Which you just said.
No.
You
have to think a little bit. I mean, these are concepts that are alien to state planning, but they're reasonable for our situation.
No, I think your models work when you're annexing or you're expanding your UGB. That's their formula. The problem is we are what we are. The voters, they did a boundary to bring in the commercial stuff they needed and so on and so forth. No one worried about doing an analysis on how it was going to affect UGBs and planning. Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine if they would have incorporated that first,
That 2001?
That was like
all the way out. That was 8 miles out.
Okay, you have one house per acre.
Yeah.
Which is our density roughly today.
Is it?
And so therefore it's probably too late to show them another map showing a large UGB that's about twice the size.
Just as a comparison, here's how it could have been.
Yeah.
We're not going to solve this, but we are going to wait on DLDC and see what happens.
Yeah.
So now, did you have a motion to adjourn?
I move.
I second it.
We did.
Okay, motion made and seconded. Okay. If there are no further objections, we are adjourned.
Jonathan, you have a second set of minutes.
Oh, yes, we do.
They should be there. Oh, I gave you.
Oh, they're not being in here.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, so it is right here, I think.
You know what I mean? Sorry about that.
So I'm already on a couple boards. I don't need any more.
Just a couple?
No.
That's all?
One is 6.5.
Oh, yeah. A
couple of boards that involve the
time.
I'm on the state boards, too, so.
Can I get you there for
sure? Yeah.
I didn't see any time here.
Well, so much of what we discussed is that.